I don't know if you guys can handle all these huge changes, you know, the Lord's Supper first, and yeah, that's right. Here's Johnny. You got to be old to remember that. Here's Johnny. That's before some of these people were born. Yeah, yeah. That's old stuff. Hey, I've got some great news. They found my Bible.
Yeah, it was here.
Yeah.
It's been here for a while.
She's been waiting for
you. Yeah. Wow. I need that thing. I've got others, but you know, that's the one that's got all the underlines and all that sort of stuff. So anyway, I owe you all an apology.
Okay.
Cause I missed 4 Sundays out of the last 5. That's not so good. You know, what can I say? It's just sort of happened. Jan and I had our 40th anniversary, and I'm not apologizing that we spent time on our 40th anniversary and celebrating that. And then we came back, and then we hadn't had a family vacation literally in over 10 years, like as in mom, dad, and kids go somewhere and hang out together. And so we had scheduled that even before we scheduled our anniversary thing. So then we took off again. And then we got to have our grandkids here, which is great. All right, so on that note, all right, we did a little hike yesterday.
With the product placement.
Yep, the product placement. What is that? Planters peanuts there. Yeah. Dragged Ken up there, and he was on the way up. He was definitely keeping up. On the way down, he was definitely not keeping up. But that's all right. Yeah. But yeah, we didn't just do Nevada Falls. We went even farther. It was pretty good. Yeah. All right. So, I saw the movie Inside Out this week.
Oh, nice.
It was hanging out with little kids. And, so that's sort of cool. But anyway, now let's get to our actual sermon. All right. So we've been doing the wisdom literature. All right. Name one book in the wisdom literature, Juan. The wisdom literature. It's about 5 books in the Bible. You got one? Ecclesiastes! Good. Alright, name another book in the wisdom literature. Flo.
Well, he said the one I was going to say, Proverbs.
But you were actually going to say that, right?
Yeah.
You were.
All right.
Good.
I've read all the Proverbs.
All right. Another book in the wisdom literature. Let's see, Zane. This is easy for you. Psalms. Okay. Another book in the wisdom literature. Josh.
Job.
Let's go. All right. There's one left.
Robert.
Anybody?
That.
Nope. Robert. Yeah. Song of Songs. Of those, which have we gone through for sermons so far? Job and Psalms. And we're skipping Proverbs from now. In fact, I considered not preaching Proverbs, but it feels like I can't do that. I can't not preach Proverbs. But honestly, Proverbs doesn't preach very well. It's not like you can do an expository sermon on the book of Proverbs. Not really. Because Proverbs is kind of random. But I'm going to preach from the book of Proverbs anyway, after we do Ecclesiastes. And I don't know about Song of Songs. I don't know about that one. I probably got to put at least one in there, you know. And we'll let the single people just skip that Sunday or whatever. All right, so there you go. So, Ecclesiastes. So there are a few questions that all humans ask, even atheists, everybody. No matter what your worldview is, there's a few questions that people ask. The basic questions, like, how did I get here? Why am I here? Almost the same question. What is my purpose? What's the meaning of life? Okay. What value do I have, if any? What is the nature of ultimate reality and what happens when we die? Those are the questions everybody wants to answer. And of course, philosophers have tried to answer those questions, as have religious people, and even atheists try. But we have one really wise person, a philosopher in the Bible, who kind of addressed some of these questions, right? Questions like purpose, meaning, value. And his name is Solomon. All right? And according to the Bible, you don't have to agree with the Bible, but you probably will since you are like a Christian, you know. According to the Bible, Solomon is the wisest person to live before Jesus Christ himself. Now, Ecclesiastes is a interesting book. It's a genre almost of itself. In most of the Bible, God is speaking to us. All right? But there are parts of the Bible where we're actually speaking to each other, and there's parts of the Bible where we're speaking to God. In Psalms, we are speaking to God, with some exceptions, but most of the Psalms involves humans talking to God. So the inspiration of Psalms is of a different sort. You don't read Psalms to discover doctrine, or to some extent, not even theology. You read Psalms in order to understand how to have a great relationship with God. Because the chief writer of the Psalms, David, is a person after God's own heart. All right. But there are two books in the Bible where it's primarily people talking to people, and God is, in some sense, peripheral to that book. One of them is Ecclesiastes. And another one is Psalms. So in Psalms, Psalms are humans talking to other humans about life, and then Ecclesiastes as well. So you would think, well then, how could that even be inspired? It's interesting. So I believe both in Proverbs and in Ecclesiastes, we have a supernaturally wise person reflecting on the ultimate questions of life. So although arguably you could say, in a sense anyway, God is not speaking directly in either Proverbs or Ecclesiastes, they absolutely are inspired and absolutely they are helpful to us as Christians. All right. So anyway, kind of an interesting genre. It's worth noting that though. Most of the Bible, God is speaking to humans. Psalms, humans are speaking to God, Ecclesiastes, and Proverbs is humans speaking to other humans, sort of talking about God in essence, essentially. Okay? Why Solomon? Well, for a couple of reasons. Solomon was in a unique position because he ruled over Israel at the absolute pinnacle of its power. And he also ruled at a time of relative peace. There were almost no wars going on during the reign of Solomon. So Solomon was able to do what most kings of Israel didn't even have time to do, which is to reflect on the meaning of life. Okay, and number two, another reason why Solomon is because he had a pretty unique father, didn't he? Yeah, he had David, a man after God's own heart, and also a great military and religious leader as a father. And number three, because God gave him supernatural wisdom. Yes? So let's go to 1 Kings chapter 3. I think this story is familiar to almost all of us, but we're going to go back there anyway. And there's probably a few people who actually don't know this story. All right, I won't have you raise your hand if you don't know the story, but I'm guessing there's a few of us who don't. It's the story of how Solomon came to gain his wisdom. See, I was blocking Michael's view there. Actually, the podium is doing most of the blocking, but yeah. 1 Kings 3, starting in verse 4. The king went to Gibeon to offer sacrifices, for that was the most important high place. And Solomon offered 1,000 burnt offerings on that altar. At Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon during the night in a dream, and God said, "Ask for whatever you want me to give you." kind of like a genie in a bottle, except this is a real one, and it's like the hyper super genie, right? So God says, ask for anything. I say, man, around the world vacation, I don't know.
A brand new
car. Yeah. A wonderful family, I don't know, a great career, whatever. All right, this is quite a moment. And you got to realize Solomon was, I don't know if he was a teenager, he may have been a teenager, he may have been possibly, let's say, in his 20s. And, you know, at that age, we're not thinking about eternal things generally. You know what I'm saying? We're thinking about the next moment. You know, teenagers, the whole frontal lobe not being developed thing. And yeah, so wise choices. Let's put it this way. People that age are not known for wise choices. All right. I'm sure people, the young people in this room would be an exception. All right. Now, good. Solomon answered, you have shown great kindness to your servant, my father David, because he was faithful to you and righteous and upright in heart. You have continued this great kindness to him and have given him a son to sit on his throne this very day, that son being Solomon. Now, Lord, my God, you have made your servant king in place of my father David, but I'm only a little child and do not know how to carry out my duties. Your servant is here among the people. You have chosen a great people, too numerous to count or number. So give your servant a discerning heart to govern your people and to distinguish between right and wrong. For who is able to govern this great people of yours? The Lord was pleased that Solomon asked for this. So God said to him, since you've asked for this, and not for long life or wealth or all the other stuff that almost everybody would ask for, right?
Yeah.
Nor have you asked for the death of your enemies, but for discernment in administering justice, I will do what you have asked. I will give you a wise and discerning heart, so that there will never be anyone like you, nor will there ever, so that there never have been anyone like you, nor will there ever be. Moreover, I will give you what you've not asked for, both wealth and honor, so that in your lifetime you will have no equal among kings. And if you walk in obedience to me and keep my decrees and commands as David your father did, I'll give you a long life. Then Solomon awoke and he realized it had been a dream. He returned to Jerusalem, stood before the Ark of the Lord's Covenant, sacrificed burnt offerings and fellowship offerings, and he gave a feast for all his court. And I'm sure a lot of you know the story that follows about the two women. They come in before Solomon, and they both say, this kid is mine, and all that sort of stuff. And he says, all right, let's figure this out. Let's cut the kid in half, you know? And the woman says, let's do that, you know? I think even I could have figured that one out, but, you know, so either way, Solomon had great wisdom. Chapter 4, verse 29 through 34 of 1 Kings, just a little follow-up on this. 1 Kings 4, 29 through 34. God gave Solomon wisdom and very great insight and a breadth of understanding as measureless as the sand on the seashore. Solomon's wisdom was greater than the wisdom of all the people of the East, greater than all the wisdom of Egypt. He was wiser than anyone else, including Ethan the Ezrahite. Don't know who Ethan was, but apparently Ethan was pretty sharp also. Wiser than Haman, Calcol, and Darda, the sons of Mahol. His fame spread to all the surrounding nations. He spoke 3,000 proverbs. His songs numbered 1,005. He spoke about plant life from the cedar of Lebanon to the hyssop that grows out of walls. He also spoke about animals and birds and reptiles and fish. From all nations, people came to listen to Solomon's wisdom, sent by all the kings of the world who had heard of his wisdom.
Wow.
And in Ecclesiastes, this is toward the end of Solomon's life, clearly, or certainly well into it. And so what we have is him looking back, and he's saying, all right, folks, this is what I learned. All right, so let's read it. Let's go to Ecclesiastes chapter 1. Okay. It's right after Proverbs. Here we go. The words of the teacher, son of David, king of Jerusalem. Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. Oh. Thanks for encouraging us, Solomon. What do people gain from all their labors in which they toil under the sun? Now, what he's going to do is he's going to give us about six examples or so of what he means when he says life is meaningless. Generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun sets and hurries back to where it rises. The wind blows to the north and it turns south and turns to the north. Round and round it goes, ever returning on its course. All streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. The place of the streams, the place the streams come from, there they return again. All things are wearisome, more than one can say. The eye can never have enough of seeing, nor the ear it's full of hearing. What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one can say, look, something new? It was here already, long ago. It was here before our time. No one remembers the former generations, and even those yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow them. Meaningless, meaningless. Now, there's a key phrase here, under the sun. So, life under the sun. And that phrase, life under the sun, that was like an idiomatic phrase. What that meant is life on the earth. Life in human experience, based on human experience, based on human wisdom, and based on human observation, these things are true. Life under human philosophy, life in a humanistic world, life without taking God into account, is what?
Meaningless.
And if you talk to nihilists, such as Friedrich Nietzsche, or others, and they sort of blast you with their nihilism and the fact that life is meaningless in the big picture. If you take God out of the equation, it's hard to logically disagree. So then you've got the existentialists that say, well, let's make meaning even though there is none. Well, that really solves the problem. This is Solomon, son of David, king of Jerusalem, and he has investigated all knowledge, biology, physics, cosmology, finances, military, history, everything. And what's he conclude? Meaningless. Well, Solomon, what do you mean by that? So Solomon spends the next three chapters explaining what he means, giving us the depressing news that life is meaningless. Now, he's going to qualify himself. He's going to occasionally say, well, everything is meaningless, but this thing is slightly more meaningless. I mean, this one is a little bit less meaningless than that one, you know. He's going to qualify himself. So he's going to make sort of broad statements that seem like overstatements. And then he's going to back off a little bit and say, well, okay, this is better than that. All right, even though it's meaningless, at least it's better, because he's got to be honest about it because he's talking to the world. All right, but in the end, he reaches the same conclusion, meaningless, meaningless. Have you ever felt that your life was meaningless? I remember that. I remember it. For me, it was a crisis, really. It was my sophomore year in college, and I had been doing all this stuff. And I was, you know, very, like 20 years old or something like that. And I'm like, what am I doing here? Why am I in college? What's this all about? I started asking the obvious questions. I'd been saying for a couple of years that I was an atheist. That's what I'd been saying. Whether I really was, I don't know. So I started saying, so what's it all about? One of my favorite artists is such an obscure rock group, you know, it's Mark Almond. But one of their songs is, what am I living for? Why am I living? Why am I giving all my life? Bring up a family, children and wife. Tell me, my friend, hasn't that been done before? It's kind of like what Solomon said, right? Meaningless. I mean, I do everything that everybody else is doing. Why? Because that's what they do too, as if that would somehow give life meaning. I mean, think about it. And in fact, I can remember having panic attacks. I'm not subject to panic attacks, but in my sophomore year in college, I remember having panic attacks. It's like, the thing I just discovered means everything I'm doing is a waste of time. Oh, so what am I going to do with my life? So what does the world say to do about the facts of life? It says, well, just don't think about it. Or get drunk. Or take hallucinogenic drugs. That's what I was doing at the time to try to find meaning. Have a lot of sex. Gamble. Work really hard. Seek relationships. Create a legacy. Build something. The last ones on the list aren't bad things. The first ones on the list, sort of bad things. The second half of my list, they're not bad things. All right? Just keep moving. I remember I lived, when I was, my first year in graduate school, I had to find a room, so I was living in this house up in the hills there with this German lady who's a doctor, and I remember it really struck me. This is right about the time I became a Christian, actually, like right about that time. And it was vacation coming up, and she said, "I hate vacations." "Really? You hate vacations?" "Yeah, I hate vacations. Because when I go on vacation, I stop and I think about life, and I realize it's meaningless. It's worthless. And I get depressed, so I just want to go back to work." How depressing! But she was an atheist. At least she's honest. A lot more honest than a lot of us are. But Solomon says, in the big picture, taking God out of the equation, that's what we're doing here. That's what we're doing here. He says, life under the sun, not S-O-N-S-U-N. Life under the sun. Just life on earth. Just physical stuff. Meaningless. And if you think about it, I did a little calculation. The population of the world is just over 8 billion. So you, Michael, are 0.00000125% of all humans.
Whoa.
Boy, you're just really important. Do you ever think about that? I mean, there's a lot of people. And 99.999999% of them don't even know you. And they never will. I mean, how significant are you? Really? Actually, a tiger is more important and more significant than you are. I'm not kidding. It, viewed from a rational perspective. All right? Because, it's in my notes and I lost it. How many tigers are there? There are roughly 4,000 tigers in the world. So each tiger is 0.25% of all tigers. And if one tiger dies, that actually, it impacts something. You die. I mean, is it going to affect the genetic pool of human beings? If you don't have children, it's really. So Solomon says, in view of the vastness of time, life is meaningless, right? He says that. The wind blows to the north and blows to the south. The sun rises, sun sets. The earth goes round and round and the streams flow into the sea. And what's different? Nothing. In the end, what difference does your life make? All of you know we're not going to end here, right? We're not going to end here, but we're talking about life under the sun. All right? You are insignificant. Generations come, generations go. The sun comes and goes. The wind blows round and round. It never stops. Streams flow into the sea. Think about this. You ever been to the Grand Canyon? Yeah. That river carved that canyon. And you think you're significant? I mean, a couple of grains of sand at a time. And in fact, although you're 0, 0, 0, you know, how many? 6 zeros and a 1. That's what percentage of human beings you are. How about your lifetime compared to the length of the earth, how long the earth has been around, which is around 4.5 billion years. So your lifespan is 0.00001% the age of the earth. I mean, dinosaurs were around for how many years? Like 180 million years? Humans been around for, I don't know, humans compared to all life, we're just nothing. And by the way, you are not unique. Well, in a way you are, in another way you're not, right? Nothing new under the sun. What's that? Oh, okay. I don't know what happened there. Okay. Yes. All right. So, how many people will remember you, Noe, 200 years from now?
200 years from now?
Yeah.
Maybe my great-great-great-grandchildren.
You think so? Can you name your great-great-great-grandfather?
Yeah, I think his name was...
All right, you're messing my example up, okay?
Three greats?
I know my great-great.
All right, fine. 300 years. All right. Yeah, who's going to care about you? Yeah, it's like, I mean, your great-great-great-great-great-grandmother, when she was alive, thought she was probably pretty special, but you don't even know her name, you know? And is anybody, are you going to affect humanity in the end?
No.
The answer is no. Right? In view of the immensity of time and space, life under the sun is meaningless. And then, all right. So then Solomon says, okay, that's true. I mean, just based on the numbers, you know, things come and go and there's nothing new under the sun. You think, well, there's something new under the sun. For example, I don't know, they invented a new widget or a new cure for a disease. And Solomon would say, well, I mean, technically it's new, but really it's a different version of something that's been done many, many times before. Alright, so then Solomon says, okay, in the view of the vastness of time and space, life is meaningless, but what about exploring knowledge? Maybe I could learn something new. Maybe I could develop my intelligence. Maybe I can graduate from a university and get a PhD, doing research, making discoveries, helping people get to the moon, maybe something like that. Maybe wisdom gives purpose and meaning to life. Well, let's see. Put it this way. Solomon did the experiment. All right? Solomon did the experiment. Let's see what he discovered in this matter. Verse 12. I, the teacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem. I applied my mind to study and to explore by wisdom all that is done under the heavens. What a heavy burden God has laid on mankind. I've seen all the things that are done under the sun. All of them are meaningless, a chasing after the wind. What is crooked cannot be straightened. What is lacking cannot be counted. I said to myself, look, I've increased in wisdom more than anyone who has ruled over Jerusalem before me. I've experienced much of wisdom and knowledge. Then I applied myself to understanding of wisdom and also of madness and folly. But I learned that this too is a chasing after the wind. For with much wisdom comes much sorrow. The more knowledge, the more grief. So, wisdom is better than foolishness, but in the end, it's really pretty much all the same thing. He said, what is crooked cannot be fixed. We fix the potholes and what happens? You get new potholes. You know, you put the water resistant stain on your porch and your house, and what happens?
It rots away.
And you know, you help people work out, you know, their aggressions, and you even help a peace treaty and bring a war to end. But then guess what happens? Another war happens. And, you know, you take care of the poor, and we're trying to help those in need of food here in Merced, and that's a good thing, but guess what? There's always going to be hungry people. There's always going to be homeless people. what is crooked cannot be fixed. In the big picture, the big human problems will never be solved. In the end, we may defeat one illness, but then guess what happens? There's another illness. And besides, everybody dies. So what are you really solving? Again, in the big picture, we're not going to put an end to evil and corruption, by the way. All right? He says it's like chasing after the wind. Good luck chasing after the wind. I mean, that's a waste of time. It's like trying to bail out the ocean. All right? He says, and the more wisdom, the more grief, which is true. You know what they say, ignorance is bliss. And people who are mentally challenged people generally are happy than people who aren't. You know what I'm saying? Because they don't realize how terrible it is. All right? And it's true. Now, by the way, he does back off a little bit, Ecclesiastes 2. Remember I said he qualifies himself a little bit, partially, okay? Ecclesiastes 2:12-16. Then I turned my thoughts to consider wisdom and also madness and folly. What more can the king's successor do than what has already been done? I saw that wisdom is better than folly. All right, so there you go. It is better to be wise than to be a fool. All right, it is better. But basically, it's like anything divided by infinity is zero. So, like, if being wise is 100 and being foolish is 10, okay, divide them both by infinity and you're left with zero. But 100 is better than 10, basically. Just as light is better than darkness. The wise have eyes in their heads while the fool walks in darkness. But I came to realize that the same fate overtakes them both. And I said to myself, the fate of the fool will overtake me. And then what do I gain by being wise? I said to myself, this too is meaningless. For the wise, like the fool, will not be long remembered. The days have already come when both have been forgotten. Like the fool, the wise too must die. So you got all this wisdom and then you die. And then what's left? A bunch of rot and dust and that's about it. Sure, it's better to be wise than to be foolish. But even your wisdom will be forgotten. All right, so Noah, you have, if great, great, great grandparents, you probably have I think 16 great grandparents, if you do the math. Which of them was the wisest?
You wouldn't know,
okay. But one of them was wiser than the other. All right, just to make a point. So yeah, it's better to be wise than to be foolish, right? But in the end, wisdom is meaningless. In view of the vastness of time and space, life is meaningless. In view of the fact that broken things cannot be fixed and the fate of the fool is the same as the wise, they both die and then what's left? Wisdom is meaningless. So then Solomon says, all right, well, there's one more possibility. All right. Sure, in view of time and space, just calculate it out. You know, I'm not all that significant. Okay. Oh, and, you know, it's better to be wise than foolish, but in the end, if I'm wise, I die. But hey, pleasure. I'm going to try pleasure. I'm just going to have fun. That's what the existentialists would say. Let's just go for it. Let's create meaning by doing stuff. And all right, so let's see how that worked. So, let me see. Yeah. Ecclesiastes 2:1-10. Yeah, that's a good picture. I don't know if that's real or not. Yeah. I said to myself, come now, I will test you with pleasure. To find what is good. But that also proved to be meaningless. Laughter, I said, is madness. And what does pleasure accomplish? I tried cheering myself with wine and embracing folly. My mind still guiding me with wisdom. In other words, I want to just do crazy stuff wisely. Mm-hmm. All right? I tried cheering myself with wine and embracing folly. My mind still guiding me with wisdom. I wanted to see what was good for people to do under the heavens during the few days of their lives. I undertook great projects. I built houses for myself, and I planted vineyards. I made gardens and parks and planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. And I made a really nice home for my family to live in. And we even had, like, an addition on the house, and we had a vacation home, and we could go there, and we could relax. I made reservoirs to water groves of flourishing trees. I bought male and female slaves. I had other slaves who were born in my house. I owned more herds and flocks than anyone in Jerusalem before me. I amassed silver and gold for myself and the treasures of kings and provinces. I acquired male and female singers and a harem, as well as the delights of a man's heart. Yeah, like 300 wives and 500 concubines, something like that, okay. All right. I became greater by far than anyone in Jerusalem before me. In all this, my wisdom stayed with me. I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my labor, and this was the reward for all my toil. Yet, when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless, chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun. Is pleasure evil? No. In fact, let's read Ecclesiastes 3:11 through 13, where he says, "He has made everything beautiful in its time. He has also set eternity in the human heart. Yet no one can fathom what God has done from beginning to the end. I know that there is nothing better for people to do than to be happy and good while they live, that each of them may eat and drink and find satisfaction in their toil. This is the gift of God." So it's not like pleasure is bad. But if you're looking to find ultimate, fulfilling, satisfactory meaning in these things, meaningless. And by the way, Solomon did the experiment, all right? If anybody would know whether great accomplishments could give meaning, it'd be Solomon. Nobody in this room is going to accomplish even one-tenth what Solomon accomplished. I don't care how hard you try and how young you are. All right? So Solomon says, been there, done that. Meaningless. Okay? But this is what the world puts out there as having meaning. If pleasure could create meaning, we're talking about 300 wives and 700 concubines, all right? If having sex could create true ultimate sense of value and purpose, Solomon, he tried it, and it didn't work. What does pleasure accomplish? Nothing. And in Ecclesiastes 5:10, he says, "Whoever loves money never has enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with their income." He says, "This too is meaningless." Can you relate to seeking after stuff to be fulfilled? As a Christian, yes, you can. And don't lie to me and tell me that you can't relate to that. Because we're so prone to forget this simple truth. This is true of every form of pleasure. In view of time, life is meaningless. In view of wisdom and knowledge, life is meaningless. In view of the opportunity to have accomplishments, to gather wealth, and just do stuff that seems worthwhile, meaningless. All right? But fortunately, great life achievements give purpose and meaning to life, right? Well, let's see. Let's go back to Ecclesiastes chapter 2. This will be our last depressing thing. Then I will finish with something slightly less depressing, okay? Yeah, I better do that, otherwise, all right. Those kids are sure having fun, but in the end, yeah. How about great accomplishments? How about the acclaim of our fellow human beings? That person was awesome. All right? So, verse 17. "So I hated life because the work that is done under the sun was grievous to me. All of it is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. I hated all the things I had toiled for under the sun because I must leave them to one who comes after me." And who came after Solomon? Rehoboam, actually. Rehoboam. All right? How did Rehoboam do? I mean, yeah. "And who knows whether that person will be wise or foolish? Yet they will have control over all the fruit of my toil into which I have poured my effort and skill under the sun. This too is meaningless. So my heart began to despair over all my toilsome labor under the sun. For a person may labor with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, and then when they must leave all they have to another who has not toiled for it. This too is meaningless and a great misfortune. Yeah, I think about the fact that, you know, I'm going to leave money to my kids. Like, how does that actually change anything? This too is meaningless and a great misfortune. What do people get for all the toil and anxious striving with which they labor under the sun? All their days they work, is grief and pain. Even at night their minds do not rest. This too is meaningless. A person can do nothing better than, I already read that. Alright? Yeah, so, that's pretty awesome. You know who that is, right? Simone Biles. Alright? So, when she dies, who gets her medals? I don't know. Yeah, there's a movie, Chariots of Fire. Alright, that's an old movie. Remember? Alright. And so, this guy here, he's the Christian guy. That's what's his name? Eric Little, right, Eric Little. And that's his best friend, Harold Abrahams, who's Jewish. He's like, I don't know, some kind of a probably Presbyterian, but a very devoted Presbyterian. And he made the Olympic team. In fact, he was the number one sprinter in the world. And so he was qualified for the 100-meter run, but the qualifying thing was on a Sunday. He said, I'm a Christian. I don't work on Sunday. Now, I don't agree with his doctrine on that, but that never mind that. So what he did was he gave up his place in his event, and this is his Olympics, his time. He says, I'm going to give it to my friend, Harold Abrahams. And Abrahams was the second best 100-meter sprinter in the world. And he took the gold medal. But there's a scene afterwards where they're having this big party. And everybody's cheering, hey, Harold, you won the gold medal. And they couldn't find him. Where is he? And they found him over in a bar, drunk and depressed. And they said, Harold, you just won the gold medal. You should be excited. And he said, I've lived my whole life for this. And now what? Now what? I mean, whoop-de-doo. Right? What am I living for? All right? But we better go to Ecclesiastes chapter 12, right? By the way, I've been going a little bit long, I think, anyway. Maybe not. I was going to read Philippians 3, 3 through 11. Well, we won't read it. I'll just kind of mention it. So basically, Solomon did the experiment, this experiment. Is meaning found through stuff, through accomplishments, through making yourself great? And the answer is, in the big picture, meaningless. And then you die. All right? And then Paul, in the Philippians, he asked the question, is there meaning and purpose gained through being religious? He says, Jew of Jews, the tribe of Benjamin, as to religious righteousness, faultless, student of Gamaliel, top dog in the religious world. You know what he said it was worth? He said, garbage. Meaningless compared to knowing Christ. Even being religious outside of an actual relationship with the actual God, Paul said, meaningless. Worth less than nothing. So we've kind of had the experiment on the worldly end of things. Solomon says meaningless. And we've had the experiment on the religious end. Nobody here is more qualified to be an awesome, amazing religious person than Paul. All right. Both of them concluded meaningless. So Ecclesiastes 12. Let's go there. By the way, we are going to have a second lesson from Ecclesiastes next Sunday, but we're going to skip to the end because if we didn't, we just leave you feeling depressed. So I have no choice but to go to the end of Ecclesiastes, and then we'll circle back around next week and find some other wisdom, because there's some pretty cool wisdom from Solomon that we didn't read yet in this book. All right, here we go. Ecclesiastes 12, starting verse 8. Meaningless, Meaningless, says the teacher. Everything is meaningless. End of story. That's his conclusion. All right. And then somebody wrote an epilogue. And I'm not sure if it was even Solomon who actually wrote the epilogue. I don't know. Somebody wrote it. Whoever wrote it, praise God for the epilogue, okay? All right. Not only was the teacher wise, but he also imparted knowledge to the people. He pondered and he searched out and set in order many proverbs. The teacher searched to find just the right words, and what he wrote was upright and true. The words of the wise are like goads, their collected sayings like firmly embedded nails given by one shepherd. Be warned, my son, of anything in addition to them. Of the making of many books there is no end, and much study wearies the body, which our student friends will agree with that. But here's his conclusion. Again, now whether this is Solomon's conclusion or the epilogue writer's conclusion, I don't know. But it's the conclusion of the book of Ecclesiastes. Now all has been heard. Here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of mankind. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or whether it's evil. Yeah, much study wears the body. Well then, what gives life meaning? The answer is God. Because all those meaningless things acquire infinite meaning. Even the smallest thing. Even just showing up on Friday to play basketball with the guys. You know what I'm saying? And just because the guys hadn't been together for a little while. And ending up, you know, kind of pain that night. It has meaning. Because it's in the name of God. So, put God into the equation, and it changes zero into a lot. Anything with eternal consequences has great meaning. Brianna, if you help one person become a Christian in your entire life, you've done something more significant than Governor Gavin Newsom. I'm not getting into the you may think he's great or terrible, that's beside the point. Beside the point. He's the governor. And he determines how like $100 billion a year gets spent.
Yes, sir.
But I'm telling you, Brianna, if you help one person go to heaven, what you did is more significant than what Governor Gavin Newsom did. Right? Because in view of eternity, in view of God, meaningless becomes meaningful. All right? And that's the deal. And so, even those pleasures, in fact, we have Song of Songs, even that, it's meaningful. Yeah. With God. Anything with eternal consequences is meaningful. Fearing and serving God gives meaning. Helping people to be saved, meaning. And those other things, such as feeding the poor, which will not solve the problem of hunger, by the way, it has meaning because it reminds people that there is a God.
Amen.
Serving God and helping people to be saved gives our life significance. It makes our use of knowledge. Yes, Josh, don't drop out of school now because it's meaningless, okay? Finish and get a degree because you could use that knowledge even if it's, I don't know, economics or sociology. It doesn't even have to be religion at all because we can use money, yes, even money itself to serve the kingdom, to further the cause of God. It gives meaning, yes, even to hanging out with your grandchildren because they're a legacy. Because even though 200 years from now, sorry, no, you're the exception. I mean, I can't name my great-great-grandfather. It's written down somewhere. I can pull it out. It's like, it's just a name. But if you help somebody become a Christian, then 1,000 years from now, you know, they still would have been saved. So here's the question. Truly, deeply in your heart, are you doing these things for God or just for the same reason that everybody else does it? Okay? So that's the conclusion of the matter. I think I had one more slide. No, that's the announcements. Okay. So, life, meaningless. Wisdom and knowledge, better than foolishness, but in the end, you die. And who cares? Pleasure and fun, the more you have, the more you want. And in the end, it's not even pleasurable anymore. Accomplishments, goals, seems great, but meaningless in the big picture. But doing all these things because of God gives them great value, great meaning, and great purpose, and that is our lesson for today. Okay. Should we do a response thing? I don't know. All right, well, we'll take a response, I guess. To the Lord's Supper. That's a long time ago. Oh, my goodness. Do you all remember? That was like an hour ago, literally. Responses to the sermon, yeah.
It's encouraging that I don't want to go to work tomorrow.
Yeah, there you go. Because it's meaningless, right?
It's meaningless. But if I go to work, I can help this ministry. Mm-hmm. If I have resources, I can help the ministry to grow. So everything has a meaning. So find the meaning of life is whatever I wake up in the morning and I pray to God and I put my life in the hands of God. Then my life has started with a meaning. Walking out of my house and it's where God used me in different hours of my life throughout the day. Finding the meaning of serving, giving, helping. That's when you find meaning. Not for yourself, but for the glory of God. Mm-hmm.
And the meaning of going fishing, right?
Yes. So I can provide my dinner.
Yeah, even going fishing.
There you go. Everything is a meaning.
Yeah. Working at, what's the place? Save-On or?
CVS.
Sorry about that. Working at CVS. Any other thoughts? Any other responses to Solomon's? Yeah, go ahead.
It's meaningless, but I guess I'm one of those ignorant ones because Zane knows me pretty good. So, you know, I'm fired up about that. So, not just Zane, but also just the people here. Even though it may last for a moment, it may last for a number of years. I think it's a great time. But I understand that it is going to end. Just not today.
Just amen?
Today.
All right. What's next? See, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Thank you, John. Appreciate that. To put things in perspective. I mean, it's a downer reading it. Got to be honest. Got to be truthful. I think that's the first step in our walk with God is just taking a good look in the mirror and understanding. But I think out of this message is helping me to understand when I'm feeling empty, burdened, anxious, that I'm just not close to God and that I need to turn to Him and seek Him and believe that He's going to provide for me. And so I think in this lesson today is, as it says there, fear God and keep His commands. That's my duty. So the application is to seek God, you know. Think of Matthew 6:33, you know, but seek His kingdom and His righteousness and all these things be given. So understand that when I'm having the world bombard me with the anxieties and worries and the fears and the concerns, that I need to get back to God. I need to get back to Jesus. So thank you.
Amen. Yeah, go ahead, Danny.
You know what, back when I was going through a divorce, my dad, we were going through difficult times in my first marriage, and my dad looked at me and goes, you never know who you were before. And at times, I could forget about God and start thinking, I'm going to leave this legacy, I'm going to leave that legacy, I'm going to be important to this group of people. I see it in my and other family members that belong to different groups and trying to change things, you know, locally and, you know, keep things going, keep things working. just something to do to kill time. Mm-hmm. You know, and now I for some reason those words that my dad said haunt me, because it's you never know who you're working for. You know, mm-hmm. you have an idea, you have a goal, but it's like something might come and take that away. And it's like, what did you do? What was all your efforts for? And I just have to remember, just make the effort, make more of an effort to be close to God.
Amen. All right, so next is the announcements, and then we'll have our last song here. We have announcements, and things are a little bit slower this time of year because it's the summer, and this we don't have. But we're starting to get back on campus. We're going to having some new visitors pretty soon. That'll be great. We're going to try to run Bible talks this week on Tuesday and Wednesday at the colleges, as usual. It's only going to be like 99 degrees on Tuesday, so it won't be so bad. All right, and yeah, okay. We have our prayer thing Wednesday, 7 o'clock a.m. Everybody's invited. A lot of you have never come to that. It's the same Zoom that we have. It's on right now. All right, we have a prayer. We have people from Fresno involved. A number from Fresno. That'd be great. We're gonna have our midweek 7:30. Wednesday at Glacier 120. Our Friday fun event, by the way, on our schedule, we had said a gym night this Friday, but the gym has already been reserved. So, rats. So we're going to do a movie night.
Yeah.
We're going to do a movie night next Friday. All right, that'll be great. Probably at my house, probably, but it's possible we might do it somewhere else. I don't know, maybe the Pope Leeds will say, do it at our house. So, I don't know, we'll see. But we're going to do a movie night on Friday. Oh, yes, I forgot. It's not here, but it's important. We do our food distribution once a month. This week, Luis Ortega, Andres's brother, moved us to Tuesday. I don't know why. So this Tuesday, as in 2 days from now, 12:30, we're going to be distributing food at Sacred Heart Church. Okay? I believe Jan and I will be able to go, and we only need about 3 people. Do we have maybe 1 or 2 more volunteers for Tuesday? Okay, great. But we have 3 other volunteers. We probably will say to at least one of you, don't come because it's just too many people. So we're good. We're good for Tuesday at 12:30 at Sacred Heart. That's great. And in about, in about 2 weeks, we're going to be doing those bags again. We need 1 or 2 more volunteers than we had last Saturday. It was a little crazy for us. Okay, great. Next Sunday, worship right here. Coming up, yes, we have a movie night. Coming up would be our July 4th picnic. Woo-hoo. That's going to be at a Veterans Cove, which is, when you go to Lake Yosemite Park, it's the total, complete back area. They've got horseshoes. We're going to have kayaks. We're going to have volleyball. Yes, we're going to have volleyball. Wow. We're going to have chicken.
Yeah.
We're going to have people from Fresno and a few from Sacramento and San Francisco. Family is important, all right? So don't feel guilty if you do a family thing on the 4th. All right? It's not like that's a bad person or something like that. But on the other hand, this is really great. So maybe bring your family. All right, we want to have a really great turnout on July 4th. Yes.
9 a.m. or 10 a.m.?
It's 10. There will be people there at 9. That we have the place from 9. There'll be people there for 9. If you show up at 9, what you'll be doing is helping us. All right, serving, which is great. So you should come at 9 and help us get set up. Okay, lunch is officially at 12 o'clock. All right, there will be food. You'll probably be able to find something to eat before 12, but we're getting the chicken and all that at 12. So all right, and that's kind of an all day thing. I think we have the place till 4. Y'all come. We last had this place in October, and it was a ton of fun. So it's July 4th. Bring a friend. All right. Bring family. It'll be awesome. ICMC. All right. There's a couple people here. I'm still trying to talk into going to the ICMC in North Carolina. couple of people. I'm still trying to talk into going to the ICMC in North Carolina. I know Josh is all signed up and ready to go. And we're willing to pay for the travel. And it's not cheap, but we're willing to pay for it. All right, great. All right. Yeah. You can go, but we're not paying for your travel. And they probably won't let you in the door, but... Yeah. All right. Prayer requests. Yes.
I just found out today that my sister's leader got in a motorcycle accident, and I guess really damaged his. He got a T-bone. And I was in surgery.
Now who's this? I'm sorry.
Steve Johnson.
And this is.
He's a leader in Portland, Oregon.
Steve Johnson. Yeah, I know Steve.
He
wow.
did.
At his age, oh my goodness. He's my age.
What?
Yeah. He's riding a motorcycle. Okay. So he's very badly injured.
He's injured, but he's alive. And
okay,
he's,
wow.
He had surgery.
All right, so pray for Steve Johnson. You don't know who he is, but several people in this room do know who he is. We have a prayer request from Davion Douglas. We hadn't seen for a while. Said his friend Anthony's mom is going through something vital in her life. So pray for Davian's friend Anthony's mom. So I'd say none of us know this person, so maybe give Davian a call this week and find out how it's going, okay? So pray for her to get better. That'd be great. We're going to continue to pray for the church in Haiti. If you want to pray for peace in Ukraine and the Middle East, that'd be great. Any other prayer requests? Yes.
Hand surgery, July 1st.
Hand surgery?
Yep.
You? All right. Okay, great.
And for my son, Daniel.
Okay.
He's going through mental issues.
Daniel. Is that the one who's here?
No.
That's the one. Oh, that's the one in Michigan.
Issues, but not like my older boy.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
No, my 12-year-old boy.
All right. And Ryan, I think you were raising your hand.
Oh, yeah, I can use prayers to get a job in the game development industry, a remote job in the game development industry that pays me enough to support a family.
Let's go.
That's an ongoing prayer. We're going to pray that specifically this morning, but that's an ongoing prayer, so you could pray for that hopefully not a month from now, because hopefully it would have been answered by now. Okay? Yes?
I pray that God uses the Instagram.
Yes, we're re-upping the Instagram, and... Brianna's going to be working on that. Yes. Good. Good. Wow, a lot of prayer requests. Are you keeping up with this, Noe? All right.
Definitely pray for my son Jonathan to, you know, study the Bible, become a disciple, make that decision.
Okay.
You know,
Jonathan.
But also for, you know, the Fresno Church, for those that are have cancer, Layla,
Whitehead,
and
Okay, Noe will pray for those people because he probably doesn't know their names. He'll just pray for those, and God knows who they are. Okay? Okay, so Noe, friends in the Fresno Church, two of whom are dealing with cancer right now. Okay, Noe, you want to come up and do that closing prayer before our closing song from Zane? Okay, come on up, Noe. Do your best. If you miss something, God will remember.
God will bring that down. And you said your son is well, right?
Yes. Johnny. Yeah, Jonathan.
You got it, bro.